It's funny if I say this, but in Nigeria, I haven't received any residual income for my music from Nigeria. As a producer, we're only as good as the advance we get from the artist paying you for a beat. That's all you get for a long time until Afrobeats became global, which is crazy to me because in a region where your music is consumed the most, you're making nothing of it.
Well, yeah, this beat I want to play now, as in I play it for a lot of people, and nobody, everybody just saying like, eh, Zai, they don't know what to do with it, so let me listen to it.
SARS, the architect behind two decades of African sound, from Come Closer going platinum in America to Bad Energy turning London into a second home to Mona Lisa becoming a global phenomenon. SARS didn't just produce hits, he produced identity.
What would you pay for One Dance streaming rights today?
How much there was?
How much did that song really change your life at the time, though?
It made the Afrobeats community realize that I'm unreachable.
What do you mean by unreachable?
This guy's far gone. Okay, so let's start working with other people. Yeah, because no one was reaching out to me anymore. And that's when it dawned on me that I had to evolve and start making my own music.
What keeps your fire going? We see the tweets, and every single day what we see is we love Afropolitan. This podcast is underrated. This is the best podcast ever. But the problem is 82% of you are not subscribers, but I know you guys are watching. So I need you to click the subscribe button so you can join the Afropolitan family. Thank you. SARS, so someone may click into your specific video and they're part of the Afropolitan community. So they may be on the way to work, they may be working out or winding down from a long day. Uh-huh. So the first thing I want you to tell our audience is the reality of building a business and a life in music. What does it feel like to do this every single day?
To be honest?
Yeah, be honest.
Yeah. If you're not passionate about this, don't try it. It's extreme sports.
Wow.
Extreme sports is crazy. Wow. It's crazy. Everything is cutthroat. And I think only your passion can keep you going till, you know, you find your feet. So don't let anyone lie to you. Don't let your friends tell you, oh, you can do this, Joe, you're good. Like, you have to be convinced internally. You know, that monologue in your head has to be very convinced that you can actually do this. You actually stand a chance and you can go into music. And even at that, you know, there'll be very, very, very hard times. The odds are against you. Chances are you would not make it. I don't know. This sounds very sad.
No, say it because people need to hear this.
Yeah. Chances are you would not make it. Everything is against you, especially coming from this side of the world.
Yeah.
You know, there's way more friction and forces that work against you. So if you really don't have what it takes, don't do it. But if you do, welcome. Look at me.
No, I'm glad you're saying this because we were talking about this offline, and I want you to break it down because I feel like there's so many aspects of your business, and we're going to get into that. But I want you just to talk about what keeps you going, even though it's difficult, it's hard, the odds are against you. You came from Nigeria. That's a whole nother story. What keeps your fire going?
Passion, for the most part. Like, when I started, I was just so passionate about music that any obstacle I came against wasn't bigger than the fire burning inside me. So I would just use that as fuel to keep going. It's funny if I say this, but in Nigeria, I haven't received any residual income for my music from Nigeria. What? So,
okay.
So as someone behind the music, as a producer, we were only as good as the advance we get from the artist paying you for a beat. That's all you get for a long time until Afrobeats became global, and that's a different story. So lots of times you're literally at the mercy of the artist, mainly the artist too. If they feel like you're important enough, you know, to be compensated more after they've paid you, you know, yet that mercy to just earn a living, which I didn't accept. Right. I don't think like my destiny is tied around anyone. I think that I can't blame myself for being here in Nigeria. I can't blame myself for being in this situation. I have to figure it out. So you just have to find ways to make things work. So this is why I started making my own music, you know, DJing, just trying different things. Doing collaborative albums, dabble into signing artists. You just can't be someone behind the music and just do that here. I think you have to do more to make things work. It's better now, though, now that, you know, everything. And there's a big market for Afrobeats outside the continent, so it's way better than it used to be. But it was really, really tough getting here.
Okay, this is very interesting, because as soon as you said, and you still don't earn residuals, right? Or you have now, like, is there a setup?
Maybe someone is collecting that money. Yeah, because I know they're collecting bodies. I know of Koson, but how it works, what happens there seems like it's, I can't find any information about, you know, how that works. It doesn't seem fair or transparent enough. And this is my point of view, because I know some people seeing this video and I'll be like, oh, about this and this and this and that. But hey, haven't received anything, which is crazy to me, because in a region where your music is consumed the most, you're making nothing of it. It's crazy.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. And you know, it's so interesting because it took me back to, fun fact, I had a startup, mm-hmm. That was called Decoded, and it was like, it came out right after Genius, you know, Genius, mm-hmm. The lyrics, because we wanted to make sure that all the lyrics of Nigerian artists had a database and had a place where people all over the world could check in.
Yeah.
And the moment that someone stole our stuff, because we would add like little codes as they, if you try to steal our lyrics, we added like codes in there. And so when you try to copy and paste, if you weren't smart enough, the codes would come up.
Yeah.
So we would see different people stealing it. And I remember I went to all the different IP lawyers, and they basically could not solve this problem for me. So I can only imagine what you have had to deal with as far as like not being able to have a very clear system of how to recuperate money.
Yeah, it's crazy. And this is for the systems and people that are trying to do like legitimate business or do business morally, because there's a lot of people. The music industry, you know, everyone is looking for a way to play a fast one on you and cheat you. So there's that too, in the midst of things not working. So you just have to be very, very sharp and alert and, you know, find your way to navigate, knowing when to do something for someone as a favor because it might help you, and knowing when to charge for what you're worth, and knowing when someone is trying to take advantage of you.
Mm.
Yeah, because it's an industry where everyone is your brother or sister until they start making money. Like, right, so it's a lot you have to worry about. And so if you're not passionate about this, if you're not passionate enough, I don't think it's worth it.
Mm.
Yeah, because they glorify the 1% that is making real money from music, and they put this on TVs, on social media screens, everywhere. Everyone sees that, and you think this is what the music industry is like. But you see how much music comes out every Friday. How many people do you even get to listen to? Like, it's so cutthroat that if you're not passionate about it, like I said, nah, I don't advise you to do it.
You know, 8 years ago we were talking offline. I remember you and I met up in LA. We were taking a walk. We went to eat. And this was around the time, obviously, One Dance had come out.
Yeah.
And I think this moment for me, because it's very surreal, because I feel like we've not even had a proper sit down since that time, right? Which is crazy. But when you reflect back now, right? Thinking about the conversations that we had back then, we talked about, like, you know, what the future of this industry was going to be, Afrobeats. Like, everything that has happened since then, when you sit back now and reflect 8 years later and how your life has also turned out, the worries you had back then, the anxieties you had back then, the dreams, the hopes, everything, if you have a chance to just take a bit to like reflect on it, when you really look back at it now, how do you actually feel?
I feel like that kid that really loved music and just wanted to express himself musically would be so proud of who I am now. The things that I, you know, never dreamt I was going to accomplish now seem so day to day for me. I'm not even fazed by it. It's a blessing to look at things in hindsight and be like, oh, why was I worried then? But, you know.
We were worried, though. We were worried.
Yeah, it could have been worse.
Yeah.
The thing about Afrobeats and the music industry and everything, even though things are going great somewhat, there's still so many obstacles and problems, and they're so layered that it's not an easy fix. For example, you know, we talk about venues, that we don't have venues here, right?
We were just talking about this today. Yeah,
to accommodate the growth, the exponential growth of Afrobeats in general. Like, we should have venues that can take 20, 30K capacity because we have artists that can fill those spaces up. However, the average Nigerian does not have the economic power to buy tickets because the economy is probably at an all-time low right now. And this is not a music problem, but it affects music so much that we can't even expand. Because even if we expand, it's not affordable to people. So what do we do? So, you know, we just keep like pondering about these problems, and it just feels like a loop. Yeah. With everything that has to do with this country, it just feels like, you know, we've tried so much within ourselves, like in a country where everything, almost everything works against you. You know, we've tried, we found something, we figured it out, right? And we're doing this. And it still finds its way to hold you back. It still finds its way. Like we've really tried. You know, I think music is one of those pillars in Nigeria that's tried to shape up the how Nigerians are being perceived today. Right?
Globally.
And even at that, we still can't grow our industry the way we'd like it to grow back home. Yeah. So we always have to export the music and just hope that the diaspora is, you know, welcoming to everything we're exporting.
You know, we have a lot of sort of different sorts of people who listen and tune in. So investors, founders, business people, even people who might want to build the infrastructure for this. Can you help break down to our audience what the problem is? And what I mean by that is specifically, I'm sure, because you and I spoke about this even way back then, you've been in rooms, right? You've understood what's happening in K-pop, the advantages that they have, what's happening in Latin America with lots of music and the advantages that they have. Can you give an insight into what were some of the first things you learned about the challenges that coming from Nigeria prevents you from accessing globally? So whether it's in terms of your music is global, the taste is global, it's world class, but that when it came to maybe the stream numbers or the, what do you call, the revenue that was coming in, it's broken down in a way because of our lack of disposable income in a way that doesn't advantage you when a SARS that's from maybe Mexico can maybe exit, or a SARS that's from Korea can multiple exit, and you're still in a way exiting, but you know, the market is different, right? So what was that first conversation, that realization when you're like, oh man, I didn't realize like this is how this, the game is set up for us to be like this,
man?
He's like, you have time.
See, if you explain Nigeria to someone and they understand, you didn't do a good job. I feel like this is the best way I can explain it.
Yeah.
Because anywhere you go, there's an obstacle, right? A was born and raised in this country, and I've never experienced electricity for 24 hours. You know, some days, right? Like, you wake up feeling inspired. And you're like, you know what, today I just want to wake up and create. You know, let me have a peaceful day, make music. You wake up, there's no lights. Oh, okay, turn on the gen. Oh, they said drivers have gone on strike. There's no diesel, no nothing. And now you're just there wasting your day and you end up doing nothing. And as a creative person, you need your mental to, you know, be in the best shape to be able to work. And I'm just talking about the little things here. Bro, I don't even know where to start from, man. It's so many problems. I feel like if there's a way we can break this down step by step, because your question is so loaded and I really don't know where to, like,
let's focus on the business side of things, right? Like the streaming, because you've been in these rooms. Okay. You've been in the rooms, they're discussing it, and you're like, wow, just by virtue of where I've been born.
Yeah, okay, so streaming.
Yeah.
A million streams from the United States. I'm sure we've all heard this before. It's a couple thousand, you know, maybe 3,000 to 5,000. I'm not sure of the exact amount. That's saying 1 million streams from Nigeria. Arguably divided by 10, maybe $300 to $500. Right. So, but it would cost you the same to shoot a video for, it would cost you the same to market a song abroad as much as it would cost you to market a song here. So, but it doesn't make business sense because, back again to going back to like the state of the economy. Right, because people can afford to pay, you know, the premium prices for streaming services. So how do we attack that? It still has to go back to the economy. How do we make the economy better? I don't know. I feel like that's a question for a politician. Maybe when you bring Peter over here.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, like, so it just feels like we're waiting for the state of the country to get better so other things can start improving. I think we've done really well with the resources that we have and with all the obstacles that are against us. I think that we've done really well. I just don't know how possible. Because, I mean, people are streaming music. The people that can't stream can't afford it. There's people that can afford it. But people listen to music across the country. And if they can't afford it, just means that, you know, they don't have the money to. And how do we empower them back to the government? You know? So we're just, I guess we're just waiting until, you know, something happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Etche, remember that time I walked into a bank, I'm not going to give the name, and I asked them for $1,000, and they told me no, they cannot withdraw any dollar for me, and I was so upset, and I just remember asking everybody, how can I solve this issue? And I'm so happy that I finally have V-Band to finally solve this issue for me.
You know, the thing is, you should be able to have access to your money anywhere in the world when you get paid, right? So I'm grateful we have V-Band as a sponsor for the Afropolitan podcast. With VBAN, you're able to get paid in foreign currencies, whether it's pounds, USD, euros, and you can actually spend it in local currency as well. Now, you're also able to get a virtual card, which you can use to spend in and pay for services across the world, right? So I'm grateful to have VBAN as a sponsor.
You can download it on the Apple or Google Play Store. And remember, when you sign up, you use Afropolitan so they know you came from this podcast.
You know, there have been talks about, you know, some Afrobeats artists now, like, moving and not necessarily dealing or not necessarily spending as much time in Nigeria. Do you understand why an artist would want to move out and stay for a bit in these different places just to collect themselves for a bit?
I guess creatively, they feel freer because it's a bigger place. it's an ocean. You can swim, right? And try different things. While here, I mean, certain artists feel like, you know, a big fish in a tiny pond, and there's not much to do. So why don't you just, you know, spend your time exploring, trying other things so you can get even bigger? Because here, what's there to do here? You make a song, it's a hit. You can't even tour the country properly, right? So sometimes you can't even have access to your fans in certain parts of the country because, one, you know, the basic infrastructures of, you know, good roads are not available. You know, there's insecurity here and there. Yeah, our problems are so layered. And the problem here is they're so intertwined with one thing or the other, you know. So, I don't know. What are your own thoughts here?
So I think for me, because we had that conversation back then, and I think it's so surreal because, you know, I told you I'd moved back to Rich at the time. If you had told me, because me and you were talking, you were in L.A., I was in San Francisco at the time, I'd visited L.A. during that period, and all our thoughts was like, how do we expand this music and then let pass the diaspora too? Like, how do this whole thing go global? And now that's happened, but in a way, I was telling someone, like, it's almost like the more that the music has gone global, the more for some of us, not everybody, but for some of us, you're not being called to like come back home. Where it doesn't make sense to everybody else, it might not make sense on paper, but it's almost like there's now it doesn't make sense that we can have built something that can go global, but we can't fix the place that we've come from. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Maybe because where we're exporting it to is fixed.
But actually, that's what I'm curious about, because when would you say your music hit a point where you could go to the US and play in that arena? And then what did you see? Like, what unlocked for you?
I don't know if it's about me, but I mean, it's really, you just see the consumption. Like, you just see, you know, you check your analytics and you see they're consuming your music, and it's only just, you know, the right thing, smart thing to do to try and capitalize on that momentum. Yeah, so, yeah.
Okay. But what I'm more so saying is that you're now in the U.S., like, did it unlock, did you have to build the relationships? Was it like you got to the U.S. and then U.S. producers and artists were like, oh, we already know who you are. Like, tell us about that process of being in the U.S.
So my first experience, like first time in the U.S., I got invited to this very big artist, producer. I don't want to mention names because it's just going to start something I'm not ready for. So this A&R invited me to the studio. Mind you, this is me coming from Lagos. Never been to America before. So it's like trying to be cool.
What year was this?
2015,
okay.
Yeah. Trying to be cool and everything. I get in the studio while I was waiting for the A&R to come down. I think I saw Timbaland, someone else working somewhere. And if you know me, you know, like, I've always been a big fan of Timbaland. And I was just so intrigued, you know, by that. And then the A&R comes, like, oh, let's go upstairs. Let's go set up in the studio. And we set up in the studio. There was another producer playing some beats. You know, they took some of his beats. And they told me to play some of mine. So I was playing some stuff. They said they wanted, you know, some Afro house sounding type music. So I played one of them that they really liked. And I remember they kept telling me to turn the volume up. Right? turn it up. So, but I was maxed out, right? That was the loudest it could go because I just didn't know how to make my sound loud. So I just kept acting like, you know, there was something faulty. There was something not working. They were like, yeah, anyway, just put in a folder. Yeah. But from that day, it really opened my mind, like, okay, if you're going to operate, you know, at this pace, you have to like learn things. So it just opened my mind, and I started learning how to like make my sound as, you know, professional as possible. I met different producers and artists, and it made me also understand the power of collaboration, because in Nigeria, it's almost a taboo to have a co-producer or a songwriter, right? Even till dates, you see when someone has a songwriter, people are always like, oh, you can't write your song yourself. Like, that's not good. But it made me understand that a lot of our favorite songs are not made by one person. Obviously, there's some that are made by, but most of them, it's standard. Like, there's nothing to be ashamed of. So I decided to unlearn that thing, that process of working by yourself, doing everything by yourself before you can have that credit that, oh, this was made by me. So I had to unlearn that, you know, learn some more about music publishing. You know, it just opened a world of how things are done on a global standard. And I knew where I was, and I also understood where I needed to be, and to be there, I needed to just learn so many things, you know, meet people, understand their ways. And we started bringing those practices back home to the point now where you can't put out a song now without at least having a conversation about the splits, the master points on the song. These things are standard now, you know, in Nigerian music. Before, people don't even used to mix songs. If the song sounds good, you're sending that out, you're leaking it.
To DSPs.
No, there are no DSPs. Back then. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was just blogs. Like, you know, just
not okay. Just okay, yeah.
Yeah, but people didn't mix their songs. Like, there's so many artists that wouldn't mix their song. They record it, it sounds good, they're putting it out. So from that to paying a couple thousands to mix a record, right, for those that can afford it, is a change. And now people can, you know, people register their songs to collecting societies. You know, they're not leaving money off the table anymore. So that's really helped, you know, the Afrobeat industry with some form of structure. The structure that we lack are things that can only be built, you know, as a byproduct of a working economy.
I think you're one of the few producers, because obviously you have producers who collaborate, but I'm talking about in terms of the music that you do. Mm-hmm. You've done music with Lo J, you've done music with World, and these are like phenomenal projects, right? What is your thought process going into these sort of collaborations? Because, you know, you have to, it's almost like a marriage, but it's not a full marriage, right? You have to really have a chemistry with these people. Yeah. How do you pick which artists to go deeper into a project with instead of like one-off like tracks here and there? To do a full project with?
It's chemistry. Sometimes you just know. Funny story with World. I met World in LA through Koch. So yeah. And when Koch showed me about World, and he would like us to meet, that he wants to work and everything. In my mind, I just like, yeah, I hope he has money.
Like, I don't have no time to waste.
Right? Then we met, you know, he played in his music. His music was very, very Western. All right. But it sounded great. And I was like, okay, cool. Maybe we'll get in a session and try something. And he asked if I had any beats. And I remember playing Trouble, playing that beat. And I was like, oh, he really likes it. He'll try something to it. And the next day, he sent me what he did, which is exactly how we put out that song, by the way.
Wow. Mm. Yeah. What year was this?
2017?
Yeah.
2017, I think. That's when, or 2018, I'm not sure. I heard that, and I'm very moved by music. Like, a song sometimes can just make me say, you know what, let's do this, let's do that, let's do this. You know, I'm putting my money in this. Like, I'm that kind of person. I'm not necessarily moved by money, even though I said what I said. But that's not really my motivation. Sometimes I have all the money in the world and I really don't care. So I heard that and I just thought like, wow, I really like what if he could do this in less than 24 hours, imagine what we can do when we're looking. And I was like, you know what? I called him. I was like, you know what? Let's just make a tape together. So it's really about the music. And sometimes you can't explain. It's like art is like fashion. So you wear something, you know, it just fits you so well. And you just know like, oh, this is what I'm going to wear. It's not something you can really explain. You know, it's just something you just know within yourself. And that's how I choose who I collaborate with. And I also think that it's a better way to express yourself because both parties are equally as invested in the project than making a song or one-off or when an artist said, oh, please send me some beats, right? It's their vision. That's great too. I'm not saying that's not great. You know, it's their vision. But when an artist and a producer comes together and make a project, you know, it's a shared vision. You know, and everyone wants the best for that. So I think sometimes, you know, that might be a better way to make music.
I think the other question I wanted to ask is, obviously, in that 2017, we're young, like we want to get out there. We're definitely hustling. We want to make it, right? Now at the stage that you're at, I'm guessing that you now have the luxury to choose what you want to do and what you don't want to do, right? What was that process for you when you formulated your boundaries? That's number one. But number two, like back then, I'm assuming, okay, Saz, I'm a producer. You want beats, make me work. Let's talk. How much are you going to pay? Done. At this point now, first of all, what is the rate somebody has to pay you for it to be worth your time? Because it's no longer about, because sometimes I'm sure, like you just said, if the music moves you, you just move with the music. But there are also people who are like, Saz, like we really want you to help us produce something, right? What is that rate? What is the rate where it's like, I'm going to get out of bed because of this, but if it's not at this level, I'm staying in bed. And especially because there's rates now that you call that you know that Saz of 2017, like if it was maybe half of that, that would have been your rates back then. But now you're like way past that. So what does that look like when you look back at it now? And you're like, man, I don't get out of bed unless it's at this rate.
Okay, so I'm going to take you back. Maybe a year or 2 years after I started producing.
Yeah.
You know, I produced so many people hustling. I was... If I got paid 5K or 10K, I'm talking Naira.
Naira.
No, but this was a very long time
ago.
This was 2008.
Oh, so okay, lesson, okay.
Right. I would make a beat. You know, I was just making a beat to just gather money to, you know, get by. And so many popular artists, you know, took advantage of me where they would make music with me and not pay me or use the songs we make to go remake the song with another seasoned producer because I just thought like I wasn't seasoned enough, you know. So that happened for a while. And then I think I did a song with Da Green, the Kondo song. And when that came out, it kind of solidified my name. And everyone was like, oh, they wanted to work with me. Then there was this other big artist that I made two songs for. He said he was only going to pay me for one. Right? And I was like, okay, no problem. I'm just not going to give you the session files of the second song. And he laughed. It was like, ha ha ha. He was like, he's just going to mix the demo like that. Like, who cares? And I was like, wow. Like, so he kind of forced my hand to give him the session because I actually also cared about the quality of the song that was going to come out. So I gave it to him and he put it out and didn't pay me for that. So that day, I said, anyone that does not have what I'm charging, I'm not working with them. And, you know, that I started becoming that notorious person that, if you don't have Saz's money, don't go and meet Saz. Right? So I've always been that person where everybody's like, I beg. I don't have Saz's money since that time. And from there, now it became a thing where people just knew I didn't have time for nonsense. Or if I'm moved by the music, I'll just make the music with you and we'll figure it out. So I've always been like that. And now, to be honest, I wouldn't like to make a song just because it's a money grab.
Yeah.
Because I'm a very passionate person. Like, I really want to make music for the art and everything. I mean, money is great too, but if you just pay me because, or if you think like you have money and you can pay me whatever just because you want me to produce that, it wouldn't make me happy, but I'll do it. But I don't know what that price is after this long story. I don't know.
But what was the process then for the latest album, right? Because I think, to be honest with you, like, when I first heard the beat of Getting Paid, right? And there's the visualizer you guys put out, right?
Yeah.
But I think I played it in the car and the speakers were just like, boom, boom, boom. And I was like, man, wherever I produced the song, there was 24-hour lights. You could feel the electricity coming out of it. But what did it feel like working on this new album? Especially because, like, I think about it was supposed to even come out even way sooner, right? So yeah, the process of even waiting for it to come out, it's already produced, it's already mastered, it's already ready to go. Walk us through this process for this new album.
Working on this album is probably the most challenging thing I've faced so far. Mm-hmm. And not for creating the music. Creating the music was so much fun. Was really just putting it together and making it ready for release. It was so chaotic, like working with so many people, having to figure out a timeline that works for everybody, having to manage people dropping off, right? And sometimes certain people drop off a track that has other people on the track that throws other people off. You know, It was a lot to manage because every track had its own unique problem and, you know, just finding what works for everyone. At a point, I almost said, you know, fuck this. I'm not putting out this album anymore. Yeah, it was so challenging, but not because of the music.
Sorry, for the audience, right? Because I know some of these things, but for the people who are watching, because they think, Saz, maybe you and Asha can't have music. You guys make music. Oh, yeah, release it. It's easy to release, right? Can you walk the people through, like, what does this actually look like in reality, where it's like, hey, you have maybe three artists on the song or two artists on the song. They're competing release times, like that whole thing. Because there are people who are watching who are like, we didn't know that this is what goes into making these things happen.
Okay, let me give you an example. Say a song that has 3-4 features. You record the song. Everything's good. You talk to the artist. Oh, this is what I want to release this song. And they're like, yeah, it's all good. Everything's all good, right? Sometimes it might be a thing where the artist wants the song for themselves. But because of their relationship with you, they're not able to tell you that, right? Mm-hmm. Because they know it will break your heart. So they'll tell management, right? And management will say, we can't release this song. This date does not work for us, right? And you're like, oh my God, how are we going to do this? Okay. Maybe you figure out that hurdle. Then the label might love the song. And because they know it's not it's not their own release. It's coming out through, you know, another label, someone else. And they really like the song. So they're like, okay, we're going to figure out maybe how to jeopardize the song.
Even though they love it.
Because it's not coming out from them, right? So they might say something like, yeah, the release date is fine, but we're not giving you a license to play this on radio.
Mm.
Right, so now the song is out, and everybody's like, "This song is doing so well, but why is it not playing it on radio? Why are they not promoting it?" Like, to you guys, but they don't know, like, your hands are actually tied. You know, there's that happens. Like, there's just so many...
Stakeholder management.
Yes, different things. And this is just for one song. Artist.
Okay.
One. No, one artist on the song, right? While you're trying to figure all of this and like, okay, now it's ready to go. Artist two is like, oh, I'm releasing in 2 weeks. I don't need anything that has my name on it for the next 6 weeks. Shit. Okay. What's the next best date? You look at that one. At that time, artist three is dropping an album. Right? Like, yeah. Then there's also one where artist four says, okay, there are five people on the song, but I want 50% of the royalties because I'm the biggest artist, or that's what I just do. Right?
That's what I just do.
Oh, God, this industry.
Yeah. So how do you deal with all of all these moving parts, right? And the fans don't know this. The fans just think, oh my God, the song is coming out. Yay. When is the video coming out? You know, like, they don't know all those little
details.
Things. Yeah, details that happen, you know, behind the scene. Yeah. It's crazy. And this is just one song. Okay, let's say eventually you figure it out. You put it out. You're trying to shoot a video. Find availability of everyone. You know, sometimes you might hear things like, oh, yeah, we're going to shoot the video available on this day. You know, you just have to pay for the styling, right? And you're like, okay, cool. How much is styling? So your styling is $80,000. How much is the video? No, I'm not saying this happened to me or anyone, but this happens in the industry. If anyone says this doesn't happen, they're just lying to themselves. But this happens where there's so many moving parts that in all of this, you have to do this and still keep a smile on your face because, you know, God forbid something is wrong with you. The fans can't see that something. You have to be happy for them. Do you get what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's like all of this is happening, but yeah.
But from a relationship perspective, and I'm not saying that it necessarily even happened with this album. A lot of these people also need folks like you to also make music. And I'm talking about just in general, right? So if somebody is moving mad or the label is moving mad with you, do you hold the artist responsible or do you just hold the label? Because at some point, the label itself might come to you and say, okay, Saz, we need your help for something. So do you say like, well, you remember that time you held me up for 3 months? Don't worry, I'll see you 2 years from now. Like, how does that work for you? Or do you just let it go and see it as the cost of doing business?
I don't know. You know, I just pray to God to to give me the right ways to navigate, you know, all of this. Because it's a lot. And sometimes it dents the relationship you have with this artist. Because when you're making music, right, it's not just creative. I feel like the better your relationship with the artist, the better music you make because everyone puts their ego outside of the door of the studio and you just come to create and, you know, you're just free to talk about your ideas and everything. And that's where I think you make the best music. So imagine having a relationship like that with someone and maybe that person, you know, is two-faced or their management or their label are just doing everything else to like just frustrate the situation. It strains the relationship, right? So this is why sometimes you see someone worked with an artist, they made something beautiful, but they're never able to come back to work again. And people are just like, oh, we miss this collab. We miss when you guys are da, da, da. But they don't know, like, you know, a lot of things happened, you know, down the line. And I think this might be a function of not having music people handle the business, right? You know, so they just they don't know that it's more music business and relationship is more delicate than just day-to-day business that is faceless. Musicians are the brands, right? You can, Nike might release a shoe line and you can say this is shit. Nike's not a person, right? Nike doesn't feel anything. But as a musician, you know, you say something about someone, you know, they'll take it in. They're human beings. So if musicians that understand the business handle more of these things, they understand how, you know, important these relationships are. They understand that sometimes the magic in music comes from certain people collaborating together, making that music and not doing it individually. You know, there can be artists, producer, maybe two artists and one producer, and they have like great synergy. And anytime they come together, they make the best music. They make good music alone, but sometimes the best music comes from that synergy. And people that understand music understand the importance of keeping that friendship and that synergy.
And actually, I might have a controversial question, but a few people on this podcast have mentioned it. So people have been saying they feel like it's a weird time for Afrobeats, right? I believe there wasn't any major hit on Billboard, if I'm not mistaken, this year. And so I'm curious, are you feeling this sense as well? Do you think there needs to be almost like a revamp or reshape of how we approach Afrobeats, or maybe there has to be a shift in sound? Has there any been musings on that?
Personally, I think it's not just Afrobeats. I think it's black music.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, hip-hop, that's true. Hip hop is.
Yeah, I think it's black it's music weird. In general. The music industry definitely needs something. It needs something to change. And we're in that process right now where things are just moving around till it settles in again. I don't know what that change is eventually going to be. But we are there now. It kind of feels like when you know, in the history of music, artists release music, they promote this music on radio and everything, and when it gets big, you know, they go on tour. Then radio stations came and it became a thing where you had to do interviews. And everyone was like, oh, I have to talk about my song or, you know, my personality. No, I don't want to do that, you know. It's like this friction. Then it became a thing where you have to shoot a music video. So now I have to make a movie to the song. Like, I'm an artist. Like, why am I doing that? But now it's normal, like, you know, to do a music video, to have a movie clip, just go with that. So the time we're in now where content creation is king. Right. And a lot of artists are struggling with that because it's just new. Like, why am I making music and now I have to be in front of a camera doing something, you know, to promote the music and everything. And I just think that we're in an era where another shift is coming. And yeah, just have to stay afloat still, you know, it settles. Yeah, but black music in general is definitely suffering. Yeah, I don't think it's unique to Afrobeats. I don't think that we're not making music as good as we used to make or anything. I don't think that's what it is. I just think it's a lot of things, a lot of issues. Personally, I think social media and screen time plays a lot. You know, with how we just consume. It almost feels like we don't care anymore, right? A song comes out on Friday. Release day sometimes is, you know, the most you get from music. The next week, there's a flood and a ton of new music coming. And next week again, and next week again. So your project that's a month old, that is relatively fresh, has become stale because of the amount of music that has come out trying to stay afloat. And, you know, you just have to be very compelling and viral to, you know, stay on top of the mix. And how long can you really sustain that as a human being before you lose yourself, right? So it's really about reflecting and just, you know, I guess, going back to the drawing board and doing what's unique to you, doing what you can sustain. Because at the end of the day, it's a marathon. right? You know, you're doing this for your lifetime. You know, it's not about what's happening right now. You know, what will be happening with your music career in 5 years and 10 years, right? And not always about, oh, how do I get a viral moment now and tomorrow and next tomorrow? That's not sustainable. You will burn out, right? Yeah, so.
It's funny. I was watching Cam and Mace. They have this podcast that they do. And Mace was saying that his son was saying that he thinks the reason why music or even black music has been suffering is because artists are not getting jerked over anymore or screwed over anymore. So the sense of when they were not paying artists what they deserved, or maybe they're not giving you royalties, you guys were making the best music. So now that they now pay artists well, or artists are getting paid, like you yourself, you said, like, producers before wouldn't even get paid well, but now everybody discusses splits. And he said his son was saying, when you go back to screwing over artists, they make the best music. When you start paying them well, this is what we get.
See, and that might be true to some people.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So everyone has their point of view. I see what he's saying. You know, I guess this is why. What's this genre called? It's not Afro Adura. There's one where like the music they make is just from pain, and they make like,
oh, neo soul.
Not neo soul. No, it's like Afro something.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you've made money, there's certain experiences, you know, in life that you can't relate to anymore. So the music you make from that, you know, goes, right? But not everyone wants to listen to music from pain. Some people just want to have a good time.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, so it depends.
Yeah.
But I hear him.
No, so in 2023, you partnered with United Masters, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of other producers sometimes sign to a label, but you're working with a distribution company. What was the reason for that? And can you also talk about how that partnership also enables the SARS Academy as well? Like, can you explain it to our audience first?
I partnered with United Masters because we share a similar vision of ownership and empowering creatives, which are one of my pillars, right? This is one of the reasons why I even started the academy, for people that go through the academy to achieve things I have and more in such a shorter time, right? And they stood by those. So it was just a no-brainer to collaborate with them. And they've been very instrumental with, you know, helping the academy, because the academy is non-profit, so they're very instrumental with just helping in our times of need to just keep this going. We've really done quite a lot with the academy to just help creatives like P Prime, Tempo, Kelpie. These are people that, you know, their catalogs are so extensive in Afrobeats, and, you know, they've made marks for themselves. Even that they're in rooms that I probably haven't even been, you know, which is crazy. But that's really what I had to say about United Matters collab. It's like we just share the same vision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, what I was thinking about is you've been doing this music thing since like the early 2000s, right? In terms of like 06, 07, 08.
Yeah.
But you're still young. Do you see yourself as an OG? And the reason why I say this is like compared to like maybe the Mastercrafts or like the older producers who are there, like the comp albums and stuff, like you walk around like it's like anybody can confuse you with the Gen Z on the street. So do you actually see yourself as an OG in the industry?
I don't, to be honest. I just like to do what I do. I started really young. I started maybe when I was like 16 or so. The times when I know, like, okay, I've been doing this for a while, is the times when I wake up and I don't feel like making music. I have to rely on discipline and experience I've, you know, built over the years. That's when I was like, man, oh, I've been doing this for a while. Or other times when, the other producers with me, maybe the new producers from my academy, and we're just like working on some stuff. And I would pull up like a beat I made maybe 10 years ago. And they'll be like, damn, I was in primary school then. Like, what? That's crazy. But I'm so, you know, grateful to God for this journey so far. And I still have so much to give. I don't even feel like, I mean, I scratched some of the surface. Let me not say I haven't scratched some of it.
Some of it,
yeah. Yeah, I scratched some of it. But there's still so much for me to do and so much for me to give. And, you know, by the day, I even get more confidence to even trying, like, new things. So, yeah, I'm happy.
When it comes to, I think you might definitely understand what we're talking about. Me and Chika were talking about this, where there's a level where there are things you pray to God for, and at some point, it's almost like things just start coming fast, right? So you're like, I don't even have time to celebrate this one, because if I could celebrate this one, this other one has come. And there are rooms you're now in and people you're now working with where Saz at 16 would be like, oh my God. Like, you can imagine that Saz, the teenage boy in that room working on beats, being like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm working with Timbaland. I can't believe I'm working with, like, you know, whoever that I'm working with right now, right? When those things come, how much time do you give yourself to slow down and smell the roses? Or do you even have time to smell any roses at this point? Because think about it, like, the things you just have achieved that have come so fast, and it's like, yeah. Do you even have time to even tell people, or you're in a group chat that, I just met this person? Because maybe you used to do that 7 years ago, but now it's not your normal everyday life. So what does that look like for you?
They say the reward for great work is more work, right? So, and if you've been doing this for a while, music is so intertwined with my life that I've been doing this for more than half my life. The times when I feel like, oh, I'm always working, you know what? Let me just chill, or let me even just like celebrate my wins, or let me just bask in this moment. My mind tells me, like, what are you doing? Like, it just feels like if you're not making music, then what you're doing doesn't feel purposeful, because you've been doing it for such a long time. I have to consciously tell myself to slow down, because my brain doesn't stop. You know, it's always thinking of what's next, because you're trying to take, especially coming from this side of the world that has a scarcity mindset, you know, you're trying to take everything as much as you can, because you don't know how long this is going to last, right? So
have you ever suffered from burnout throughout this whole period? And how did you deal with it?
You just keep going. You just go. Like, yeah, you're burnt out, but you have processes that you've done out of experience. Like, I don't think I can never not make music, right? Even if I'm inspired or not, I understand the process, right? It feels better when you're inspired to make music, because, you know, it just feels like, oh, I'm doing this for a reason, but I can make music regardless. But knowing your burnt out is just a way for your body telling you, okay, you need to chill, you need to slow down, you need to take a break. But it doesn't really stop me from, if I'm burnt out and, you know, an opportunity that I've been waiting for all my life comes in, man, fuck that. I'm burning that burnout.
But, you know, the question I have to ask you, because I want to kind of shift to more of like your mental frameworks, right? You know, with success, what do you think you've had to lose, right? So maybe it's friendships, maybe it's relationship, maybe there's parts of yourself. Do you feel like there's things you've lost because of that?
Yes. People that are very ambitious. Well, let me speak for myself. Yeah. The more ambitious you are, the more other sectors of your life suffer, right? I don't think that we have... what's the best analogy for this? If you play FIFA and you see the stats of each player, say a random player, you see pace, attack, pace. 80, pace, 75. When you're increasing the attack, the pace is dropping. When you're increasing the pace, the defense is dropping, right? We don't have infinite
maxed out,
right? So it just really, the way I say it now is, what's important in life for you in this era now? If career is your answer, then focus on that. But you know, if you focus on career, you know, family, friends, relationships might suffer a bit, right? If balance is for you, you know that your pace in your career might slow down, but it would also help relationships and every other thing, you know, in your life. So it's really about what's important for you mm-hmm. in that moment. Just knowing that you can't have everything maxed out. That's mm-hmm. how I deal with it.
Mm. Well, what has it cost you though?
Yeah, but that's, so now I would say, the relationship with my family, right? I think this has made me more introverted than I would like. Mm. Right? I've also found comfort in being by myself. Mm. Right? Which has not made me over the years, you know, not your friends and family. Right, and I'm only catching up to those, you know, in the last couple of years, right? Which sometimes, you know, feels like there's friction, you know, because it's not as you've been doing something else for a really, really, really long time. Whereas, so once you start to change, your body's like, no, you know, you need to go back to this. This is not what we're used to. So I think, you know, I've really at a point in my life. Yeah, I didn't have a good relationship with family and friends. Yeah.
Wow. Well, actually, this goes into my other question. It's a different version of it. So there's a concept that I created called timeline grief, right? And it's mourning the life that you thought you'd have. And I think it's important to start asking men about these questions, because whenever I write about it, men are the main ones who comment on it, they share it with their friends. So I'm curious, with what you just said right now, what version of your life are you mourning? Is there a version of your life you thought maybe you were going to have, but now you're here?
I guess that version of me that was more welcoming and endearing, you know, to family, like how we used to be as kids growing up, you know, now I'm just so comfortable being my own best friend and just, you know, living life in my own terms. And even when I try to amend those relationships, it feels somewhat forced sometimes, which I wouldn't like. But I know that's the process of, you know, getting it to feel fluid, right? And yeah. So, but sometimes this is the price you pay, you know, to chase your dreams. Because if I chase that, could have been, oh, you don't know what to do with your life. It's to call me and be smiling every day. It's call me and smile every day and eat our food. That's the way you know. You gotta say, like, so it's like, what you want?
It's true.
So that's why I said the way I navigate this is at every point in time, you know, you think about what version of you would you like to be, right? And they all come with a cost, right? And you choose. And if you want to be that version for the next couple of years, you be that person and, you know, move on from that. That's the best way for me to just navigate. I just sit, pause, think about the version of me I need to activate now. And I try to, you know, be that person.
Mm. So that version is now connecting back with family and friends.
Yes, because it's important. I've been doing this, I'd say, in the last, since COVID really helped. I'm not going to lie. COVID really helped. COVID slowed things down. You know, it's like, okay, whatever you're doing is not important. Stay alive. All right. Stay at home. All right. And it really made me see the importance of, you know, being around family. It really made me see the importance again. Because before then, it was just nonstop. How am I going to do this? Oh, these people, or you know, no one is working with me anymore because they think they can afford me. What does that mean for me? Does that mean this is where my career ends? I need to figure out how to like rebrand. You know, I'm always just thinking of
anxieties.
Yeah, like different things. Like, yeah, but with COVID, it was like all of this is not important now. Right? What's in front of you? It's family. Spend that time. And that's why that's when that shift happened. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Right? But it also came at the right time when I could afford to slow down.
Mm.
Right? Because, you know, timing is everything. Yeah, because if that came earlier,
yeah,
right, then, you know, you start to feel that ambition is not as important when you've not even achieved anything, right? And yeah, and that can be crazy as well,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah, that can, you know, lead to you being depressed down the line. So, okay, so what have you done with this life? You know, what have you achieved and everything? So it's really just about knowing, you know, the time and season to be what you desire to be, yeah. What's best for that time and season.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because one of my favorite quotes is, it says, the only real test of intelligence is if you get what you want out of life. And what you just said about the seasons, it matters because, like you said, there was a time in my own life where it's hustle, hustle, hustle. I remember, like, you know, it took me a while to realize I had not even been at my mom's birthday for almost 10 years straight. And yeah. The reason you say all these things is like, I'm hustling to do all these things because when I make it, maybe we'll, you know, we'll celebrate at a place that's like Papa or whatever, stories you say to yourself.
Yeah.
And then one day you look up and so much time has passed and those relationships are not the same, but you don't think about it as that time is past because you're saying, oh, do you understand? Like, you know, we're hustling or we're working or we're doing all these things. And so it took me, COVID too was the year that slowed everything down for everybody, for you to be able to sit with your choices and say, well, again, maybe I'm not as hungry as I used to be. So now maybe we have small savings so we can think.
Yeah.
What life do you actually want to have if you are not moving from scarcity or anxiety, right? So I think it's something that deeply resonates as well.
And also, you should tell them, when did you go back to your mom's birthday?
Yeah, when I met her. That's why she wants me to. No, yeah. But women too help you slow down too.
Yeah, you know? And... You can't blame us sometimes as men, you know, because we have a financial responsibility, right? They say when they're having like family meeting, say now who get money first and be senior, which is crazy. So we have that pressure, you know, to be able to provide, right? Because sometimes, as a man, what we desire, you know, ultimately is peace of mind. And what gives you peace is knowing that everyone in your family is good.
Yeah.
You know, your family and loved ones. And how will those people be good? It's not by seeing them and smiling and giving them hugs, saying, I love you. I mean,
hug plus money, shall they help?
Yeah. They should be combined.
Yeah. 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 Well, more money than hugs.
It's true.
So we've been wired like that, you know, for a very long time. And I think now that, you know, information is everywhere, you can learn things that has been, you know, kept away from us for a very long time. We now see, you know, communication as human beings have also gotten better. Right, so we now see the importance of, you know, having balance in life.
Yeah. Well, in this season, what are you unlearning?
It's hard to pinpoint right now, but usually I catch myself finding things that don't serve me anymore and trying to just stop that. Say, for example, I've been sober for a year because I know that moving forward, there's no need for that, you know, if you're trying to like live a healthier life.
Yeah.
Right. On learning some of my process that I usually make music with, because it doesn't really, you know, serve me anymore. So yeah, things like that. I just can't think of anything in particular right now, but I'd say I'm very self-aware and introspective. I always like talk to myself, and I'll never lie to myself. I know the truth. I know, you know, that there are just things in life, you know, if you're trying to achieve what you want to achieve, that, you know, you just have to like unlearn certain things, you know, relearn certain things. I always try to think of life as being in order for me to achieve something, I try to imagine the person that achieves that thing. Mm-hmm. And I try to imagine the qualities of that person that achieves that thing. And I try to apply those qualities in my life. Mm. So, like, for example, when I started working out, I didn't think like, oh, I need to go to the gym, I need to do this. I thought about that version of me that is in the best shape of his life and the things that person does. And I started to apply those things. Because I know, okay, this person that's like this, he's definitely disciplined. He definitely maybe needs to go to the gym 4 times a week. He definitely watch
won't eat there by at 11 p.m. at night.
I mean, he can if he sleeps at 2 a.m. I'm just saying, but yeah, I get what you're saying. But yeah, that's how I navigate life when I'm trying to like learn a new skill for a new season. Mm. Right. So yeah, I just think of who that person is and what qualities that person has.
What are your thoughts about AI and music, right? Because obviously you've seen some of the backlash that Timbaland got regarding artificial intelligence in music. And I think for creators who are also watching, like, what is your own perspective to it? Have you played with some of the tools? What have you felt about it? And what do you think the future of even music and entertainment looks like with tools and technology like that?
Yeah, I've played with some of the AI tools, and they're very interesting. And sometimes I use them as tools to make my process faster, right? But I don't know about AI replacing human beings, you know. I don't think it will get to the point where it's as authentic and as creative as human beings can create. Because human beings just create from, you know, a universe of inspiration, right? And so far, AI isn't there yet. And this is also something new that no one even knows how the world is going to settle, you know, if it's going to be in favor of, you know, everything that's happening now or not. So I'm still in the fence somewhere, still just watching and just seeing, you know, how all of this plays out.
I want to talk about why aunties are so important to African history. Aunties represent curators of the African experience, and oftentimes they have been unacknowledged. They have literally held our archives before they were archives. They were literally institutions before we had institutions. They held so many important cultural artifacts, such as the way we braid our hair, the recipes of our cookings. They represent abundance. There's literally a reason why we call an African culture rich aunties. And we believe that with partnering with Anthony, we're able to showcase this type of history through art. So to connect to African history and get a piece of the Anthony and Afropolitan collection called Auntie, make sure to click the link in the description. And this is your way you can support our channel.
Quick break. You know how we're always talking about sending money back home? The diaspora sent home last year $20 billion just in Nigeria alone, right? A lot of that money goes to partying, Ashobi, maybe building a house that you only visit twice a year. Meanwhile, some of us are in Lagos watching Tesla stock go up 15% and not being able to have access to it. I don't think that that's right. And I feel like that's one of the reasons that we've partnered with HISA, HISA, you can sit on your couch and invest in U.S. stocks, crypto, ETFs, in the Kenyan and the Nigerian market, right? And no longer you sitting there and watching other people get rich off investing, and you're not able to get access to it because some brokerage firm in the U.S. thinks that your VPN is suspicious activity. They've partnered with Alpaca that allows them to be licensed, legit, and you don't have to trust somebody on a WhatsApp group saying, send me money and I'll invest. Download HISA. Use code AFROPOLITAN. Stop letting your money sit there while you argue about Naira on Twitter. All right, back to it.
You know how every week we sit down with people who've done it, people who've built, people who've led movements, people who've created culture. What if you could do more than just listen to them? That is why we built Convo by AFROPOLITAN. On Convo, you're able to book one-on-one video calls with in-demand experts from Africa and the diaspora. Go to convo.vip to get access to your next mentor, because sometimes one convo can change your entire path. I think we're going to switch to our rapid fire segment. This is where we ask you a question and the first thought that comes into your head is what you answer with. What's your favorite Nigerian food?
Egusi soup and eba.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think eba is top tier. I don't know, people slide on eba a lot.
What was your best song off the album, the recent album that you worked on, that it, every time you think about it you're like or are they all your favorite children?
It depends. I wake up having a favorite. As of today, I'll say Love Me Then.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your favorite city to visit?
Favorite city I visited, Cape Town.
Mm.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Mm, you didn't feel it was racist? You're like, eh.
I don't know.
It is a beautiful city. I'll keep it at that. It's a beautiful city. But the energy
you just,
there.
You just want to lose all your South African listeners, huh, in one session.
But South Africans know.
Okay.
South Africans, they know what's up.
Okay, all right. What's the best beat you've ever made?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Mm.
Okay.
What do people tell you? Or is it a mix?
It's a mix of things, you know. Sometimes I'm even surprised by some not so popular ones that people say, oh, that's the best beat you made. I'm like, okay, you say so.
What's the best business decision you've ever made?
Invest in a certain stock.
Like a...
The financial stock.
Financial stock?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it a Nigerian stock exchange or
because that shit tripled, man. I was like, geez.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's the business move you see or the business mistake you see most producers make?
Not seeing yourself as a brand.
Mm. Mm. I like that.
Because all the producers you know take their brand seriously. There's so many producers, but if I tell you to mention 10 producers now.
In Nigeria,
anywhere in the world,
yeah.
Oh, I mean,
it's true.
What's that? Versus?
Yeah,
and there was a whole series of just producers. Like, you know what's crazy?
Just mention five names.
Yeah.
So Timbaland, Swiss Beats.
You see what I'm saying? Timbaland, they're all in front of the camera. They're doing so much. Yeah. It's not just about making beats.
Kanye like, yeah. West,
Dark Child.
Yeah.
Dream.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
So brands.
Their brands, yeah, you're right. Even Neo.
No, Neo is not a producer.
A songwriter. He's probably a songwriter.
Yeah,
well.
He produces. Yeah, he kind of is a mix of everything, but okay.
What would you pay? This is the last one. What would you pay for one dance streaming rights today? Like if you could own it, the entire thing, just you.
How much there was? That song is massive.
How much did that song really change your life at the time, though?
Well, it made the Afrobeats community realize that I'm unreachable. Yeah, so it kind of put me in a mild depression.
Wait, what do you mean by unreachable?
Because they just thought, like,
This guy's far gone. Pick up phone and game.
Yeah, this guy's far gone. Okay, so let's start working with other people. So, like, you would think that, you know, that happening would, you know, open doors. Like, everybody would like, oh, let's try and, you know, work and everything. But in the Afrobeat space, they were just like, yeah, because no one was reaching out to me anymore. And that's when it dawned on me that I had to evolve and start making my own music, because I can't wait for the chance of the numerous songs I've made with numerous people come out, if at all they will come out.
Oh, because the process before is I produce this song, the artist decides when to release the music.
When to release the music.
If the artist decides not to release it, you can't.
Exactly. So like I said, these are the things that, you know, I think about when I'm like, I don't think my destiny is tied around someone else, right? So, and sometimes that process makes me feel like that.
Right? It's limbo, right?
Yeah, because you can be hot on everything and you've made crazy music, but there's also politics that play, maybe because this other producer is signed to the management, you know, of this artist you're working with. So the management, you know, to do business that favors them, they would rather have two people on their roster on the song, you know, than have someone that's not on their roster, because they'll make more money, right? You know, things like that. So even if you know your song should be on the album, your song should be a single, like, that doesn't happen. So what happens to you? You're just waiting to see. So, yeah, so that's it. That happened, and it dawned on me that I have to evolve and become someone else. And, yeah, and that's what really made a shift for me, you know. So now I can start a momentum by myself. I can snap my finger and bring fire.
My therapist always says, like, you know, sometimes as you hit a major milestone, you should do something to reward yourself. Like, maybe buy a gift for yourself, or give me something small, but just something that allows you to acknowledge what you've done or what you've accomplished, right? What was your own first purchase? It doesn't have to be the biggest purchase, but what was the first purchase you said, this is what I'm buying for myself to say, Saz, well done on something I've just accomplished right now?
Every once in a while, I do that, because I barely go out. You know, I barely just take time to reflect or spend money on myself. But, you know, once in a while, I remember, I'm like, bro, can die tomorrow. Like, you guys are like, nothing guarantees life, you know, as much as, you know, we pray for long life, you never know. So while you're here, go and buy yourself flowers.
But what have you bought?
Anything. Like, I'm very spontaneous like that. I can live here now and go and buy a car because I feel like I deserve it. Right. Yeah. So the first time, that's when I got my first car. When I made a lump sum money at once, I was like, you know what? I'm doing this. Spend all that money, got a car. And yeah, other times, you know, it might just be this time I got a house. You know, just things like that sometimes, because I know I have tendencies of always like just brushing my achievements, you know, off my shoulder. Like, yeah, I did this. What's next? But, you know, sometimes these are huge milestones. Sometimes these are the things that you prayed for, you know, when you started. This is the kind of life you desire to live. So just because you're in it now and it feels normal doesn't mean it's not worth celebrating. So a lot of times you just have to remind yourself that you did that. And because you did that, you deserve this.
Mm. Yeah. Well, a lot of African parents don't necessarily encourage their kids in the creative space, right? So lawyer, engineer, doctor, everybody knows the whole tribe. What did they want you to be, or what were you supposed to be before you clearly transitioned to be SARS? What was the career path that they had set out for you, or they wanted you to be in?
I don't think they set out a career path for me. You know, they just wanted me to go to school.
Okay.
But earlier in life, I was just computer savvy, techie guy. I also started playing video games from a very young age, and I was very competitive with video games, myself and my brother. And I always thought I was going to work at a video game company, you know, be one of those guys developing Mortal Kombat or, you know, that's
GTA.
Yeah. But I didn't see any path to like achieving that, you know, it was only a dream. That's what Nigeria does to you, man.
Yeah, killing dreams since 1965.
I don't think we have an extensive video. What do you call them? They're not makers. What are they?
Video companies, video game companies. Like
no,
EA,
but the people who like work in the company.
The developers.
Video developers.
Yeah, so music happened by mistake. But when it happened, I just knew, you know, that's what I wanted to do. And there was... My dad didn't understand. You know, my dad didn't understand what I was doing at all. He was actually very angry. There was a time... So before my dad knew that I make music as a producer, he always thought me making music and being in the studio late at night was an excuse for me being in a gang. He thought I was in a robbery gang. All right, yeah. He thought so, that, yeah. Don't worry, they'll soon catch you one day. That's what we're sure doing. And I think one time, his friend called him and told him that I was in a newspaper. And he was like, you see, he didn't even ask
what it was for.
He was just so convinced that they've caught me in Crime Fighters. He was so convinced until his friend brought the paper and they saw that I won an award. All right. And I think that's where the shift started happening. All right. And I remember my uncle told me one time they were at a bar and a song I produced came on and people knew the song. And my uncle told him, yo, song that produced this song. Oh. And then he started telling everybody that he produced this song. So I guess they just, parents just project their fears on you because they don't see a career path with something they don't understand. Right. And I think that we are going to equally have similar problems because we're being introduced to a world that as we get older, we just give up on trying, you know, to kind of understand that world. And, you know, our children may want to be saying things that
we don't understand.
Imagine your son coming saying, you know, he loves an AI robot, right? And that's who he wants to be with because it's normal for people to be with. That's not, but to you, like, the only kind of relationship I understand is, you know,
human
beings. What do you mean? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, so I feel like every generation will have their own obstacles, and that was the obstacle, like, not understanding the creative or the sports industry and things like that. But the moment they saw that, you know, you could handle yourself, they really just allow you be. Yeah.
That, I think the one question I personally have from a music perspective is the beat of life, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember, like, I don't know where everybody was when that beat comes on, right? But you yourself, when you finish cooking that beat off, and we've asked some other people, like, when you know that you... Do you know immediately that you have a hit? Or do you wait for other people to then, like, it gets played out? You know, like, do you actually know when you're like, I've cooked something that is going to go? Like, how does it feel for you? And you don't always release it immediately. So what does it feel like knowing, like, I'm sitting on a hit and this song might not come out till 2 years from now? Like, every day you're waking up, you're playing it in your house, you're playing it in your car, you're playing it for friends who come over, but it's not out there. So how do you hold yourself throughout that whole period?
Like, when I made instrumentals to Beat of Life, I kid you not, I played it to several people, several artists. They liked it, but they didn't know what to do with it because it wasn't really their thing. And it just became one of those beats that always play in the studio and people would just dance and have a good time until Wizkid came in the picture. And yeah. So, but when we made that song, I knew like, yeah, this is going to be crazy. Yeah, man. That's how it is. It's like you just kind of know. Yeah.
I'm just imagining your dad being at the bar and Beats of Life comes on and they say like, yo, it's your son that made this song. I don't know what I would do if that was my son.
I mean, I wish I experienced that. I was never with him, you know, experiencing what my music, you know, felt like. I wish so. I mean, he's passed away as well, so I mean, it's fine. Yeah. But I'm glad he understood, you know, what I do, you know, before he passed.
So the last question we ask every single guest on this podcast is, who do you want to see in that chair and whose story should be told?
Like, who do I want to be on this podcast?
Yeah.
Someone in...
It could be anywhere in the world.
Maybe DJ Maphorisa.
DJ Maphorisa from South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. We're going to South Africa, so hopefully we can do it there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going I'd really like to hear like his own POV of how they understand Afrobeats and the influence of South African music on Afrobeats from their own point of view. I think that's an important conversation to have.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Really enjoyed this as well.
Amazing.
Yeah.